5 months pregnant and 2 months from graduating college, 28-year-old Christine Kuka was thinking about the future. While things hadn't exactly gone to plan, she was focused and determined to follow her dreams while also making a better life for herself and her unborn child. It had been a difficult summer, especially when it came to the child's father. Rudy Persaud, an adjunct lab professor at her alma mater, Baruch College, wasn't interested in being involved in either Christine or her child's life. Then suddenly, he turned to 180 and became supportive and claimed that he wanted to be involved. Christine was hesitant, but hopeful. On October 24th, 1998, Christine was picked up by Rudy, allegedly to help clean his new apartment, but she never made it home. For more than 20 years, Christine's fate and that of her unborn child has remained unknown, and while no one knows for certain what happened, her family believes there is one man who knows the truth, the very man who was the last one to see her alive. This is Trace Evidence, Episode 132, The Disappearance of Christine Kupka. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today, we examine the horrifying disappearance of 28-year-old Christine Kupka. Before getting into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focused on unsolved murders and disappearances. You can follow the show on social media on Twitter at TraceEvPod, Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, or by searching Facebook for Trace Evidence. The show is also available on MeWe and Minds. If you're interested in supporting the show and getting some Trace Evidence merch, there's a Patreon available at patreon.com/traceevidence, or you can donate via PayPal. Visit trace-evidence.com for all social media links, donation options, and contact information. You can submit case suggestions directly through the website or email me at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. 28-year-old Christine Kupka left her apartment with the father of her unborn child. She was 5 months pregnant. She never returned. This is episode 132, The Disappearance of Christine Kupka. It was an unseasonably warm day on Saturday, October 24th, 1998. And 28-year-old Christine Kupka had big plans. It had been a long and challenging summer for the Baruch College senior, who'd been on an emotional roller coaster for the better part of 5 months, since the day she found out she was pregnant. While Christine was extremely excited, and according to friends and family, completely up to the challenge of being a single mother, the difficulty didn't stem out of the pregnancy itself, but more so from the father of her child, Darshanand Persaud, better known as Rudy, who Christine had met while he was working as an adjunct lab professor at Baruch. Relations between Christine and Rudy had been strained, to say the least, since she had told him about her pregnancy. Rudy had vehemently denied paternity to start, though when Christine explained that she hadn't been with anyone else, Rudy pivoted, instead going into detail about how this pregnancy was going to ruin his life. According to Christine, Rudy had broken down into tears and begged her to get an abortion, something which Christine simply wouldn't consider. She wanted to be a mother, and if Rudy didn't want to be a part of the child's life, that was his choice, but he was going to have to be responsible for his part in the child's conception. This same conversation would result in Christine learning the harsh truth that Rudy had been hiding throughout their time together. He was married, and a child out of wedlock would surely end that relationship. For several months following the announcement of her pregnancy, Christine expressed a great deal of fear when it came to Rudy. According to several friends, Christine had confided in them that she wouldn't meet Rudy anywhere besides a public location out of fear that he might do something to try and harm their unborn child. According to a cover story written for New York Magazine, Christine confided in a coworker that she worried Rudy might hit her in the stomach, or perhaps go to greater lengths to terminate the pregnancy. As the summer wore on, communication continued breaking down to the point where Christine hadn't heard from Rudy in weeks. In some ways, this was a good thing, as the chaotic situation had been growing out of hand, and most people in Christine's life thought, at this point, things might be calming down. Then, in the beginning of October, Rudy turned up again. This time, though, things were different. Rudy seemed supportive of the pregnancy and told Christine he'd like to be her birthing coach, and he began suggesting Hindu names for the child. While Christine wasn't completely trusting, she thought maybe he'd experienced a change in judgment and come to accept his role as the child's father. Valerie Santos, a friend of Christine's, told New York Magazine, quote, "She was very confused because Rudy had gone from one extreme to another in a really short amount of time. She was not listening to her gut anymore because his nice behavior had swayed her." End quote. On October 24th, Christine walked out of the Brooklyn apartment she shared with five roommates to see an apartment that Rudy had recently acquired. Prior to leaving, she left a voicemail for her sister Kathy explaining that she'd call back that afternoon. Christine, though, never did call back. In fact, she never returned to her apartment, and for the past 22 years, she and her unborn child have been missing. Christine Kupka was born on May 3, 1970, the youngest of six Kupka children born to Elaine Budell. There's not much public information written about Christine's father, though it has been reported in multiple articles that her parents separated and her father, a firefighter, passed away when she was younger. Following the death of her father, Christine moved with her mother and siblings from Mount Carroll, Illinois to Madison, Wisconsin, where she would go on to attend an alternative high school, Malcolm Shabazz. Christine has been described as an extremely intelligent, independent woman with an interest and focus on women's rights. She was steadfast and set in her ways. One friend described her as fierce, the type of woman who didn't hesitate to go for what she wanted and to work hard to achieve her goals. Following her graduation from high school, Christine attended the University of Wisconsin, though she would later drop out, hitting the road instead to see the world a bit. In her early 20s, she found herself living in Atlanta, though a visit to her sister Kathy, who was living in New York at the time, would completely change everything. It was as if the moment she set foot in New York, she made up her mind that that was where she wanted to be. Living in New York was a big shift, but Christine took it in stride, determined to make her life in the busy city. After a few years passed, Christine decided she was ready to return to academics, and so she began attending Baruch College in 1995. According to New York Magazine, Christine maintained such impressive grades, she earned herself a full provost scholarship, which is awarded for academic achievement. Christine had a sharp focus on women's rights, and while majoring in philosophy, was determined to go on to law school where she aimed to work for women's rights. Christine eventually found a home to rent in the Kensington neighborhood of Brooklyn, and while the rent was a bit steep, $2,200 a month, she was able to balance everything out by subletting bedrooms in the house, ultimately landing her with five roommates. Everything seemed to be going according to plan, and as Christine moved into her senior year, she was maintaining a 3.97 GPA while also balancing a job as a waitress in a local Jamaican restaurant. Christina dated a bit during her time in New York, her longest relationship lasting for 3 years before Christine broke things off, though she and her ex remained dear friends. After that, there were a few short-lived experiences, though when it came to men, many of Christine's friends felt that they struggled to accept her strength and no-nonsense attitude. Denise Lillian, who had become friends with Christine in high school, later stated, quote, "She picked men who weren't her equal. She's a really strong person. She needed somebody who could match her," end quote. Apparently, experiencing frustration herself, Christine decided to turn her attention away from dating and to instead focus on school. As fate would have it, those two worlds would collide. It was in the spring of 1998 when Christine reportedly developed a crush on her science teacher, Rudy Persaud. What began as a crush slowly developed into more, and Christine began inquiring as to whether or not Rudy was available, and if he was he interested? According to Anton Grant, a former classmate of Christine's and a friend of Rudy's, the latter didn't believe Christine was actually interested in him. But being a woman without hesitation or fear, Christine made it quite clear that interest was there. For friends and family, the attraction to Rudy wasn't all that surprising. Christine's mother later told CBS, quote, "The guy is intelligent and good-looking. That appealed to her," end quote. Beyond that, Christine was drawn to Rudy's lifestyle, where he didn't drink, smoke, or even eat meat, which was a big deal for her as a staunch vegetarian. Much of this came from his upbringing, as Rudy was a devout Hindu raised by a father who was a Hindu priest and is of Guyanese heritage. Things moved slowly between the two. It was a delicate situation as Rudy worked for the school, and any relationship with a student was strictly off limits. However, as the semester went on, Christine slowly began to learn more about the target of her interests. Valerie Santos, who had worked with Christine, later told New York Magazine that she'd explained Rudy was, quote, single. He had recently broken up with someone. He basically gave her the impression he was available, end quote. Christine began hanging around after class, talking with Rudy, and soon they exchanged numbers, in a sense. While she supplied her home phone number, Rudy gave her his beeper number. Just call in, and he'd call back as soon as he could. Maybe a red flag that went unnoticed, but either way, their friendship was growing. Rudy eventually told Christine that over the summer, he'd be taking a business trip to Turkey, and she was highly enviable. Following the rules, nothing happened between Christine and Rudy, not until after the ink had dried on that semester's final grades. Shortly thereafter, Rudy came to see Christine at her apartment for a date, at which time she introduced him to her roommates, signifying that what had begun as a crush had officially moved on to the next level. While Christine was clearly smitten, longtime roommate Aslam Akadag was suspicious, later telling CBS News, quote, "He is good-looking, but his eyes are really cold," end quote. Christine, though, didn't see that, and was extremely excited to be dating the intelligent and handsome teacher. According to Kathy, Christine's older sister, their date had gone well, and Rudy seemed like he wanted things to move forward between them. Kathy later stated that, according to Christine, Rudy had made it clear he wanted a relationship, something long-lasting. However, things would change that summer. It was sometime in early to mid-June when Christine began expressing concerns to friends that she might be pregnant. After confirming that she was in fact pregnant, Christine was worried, but quickly came around telling friends that she'd be graduating in January, already had a good place to live, and she was up to the challenge. The initial fear of such a major life change had given way to excitement, plans for the future, the dream of being a mother. There was, of course, one issue, Rudy himself. According to Christine, the two had only been intimate on one occasion, but she hadn't been with anyone else, and she was going to have to tell Rudy the truth. According to friends, she was scared to tell him, scared of what his reaction would be, but she was in no way prepared for what would happen once she finally revealed the secret. Christine beeped Rudy, and when he called back, she explained that they needed to have an important conversation, preferably face-to-face. Christine later told friends that Rudy said he was busy, and so she had no choice but to tell him about the pregnancy over the phone. Christine shared the contents of her conversation with multiple friends and family members. Reportedly, Rudy responded with anger at first, claiming he couldn't be the father, alleging to have had a partial vasectomy. There were, apparently, multiple conversations on the subject, during which time Rudy transitioned from denying paternity to outright begging Christine to have an abortion, something she wouldn't do. This slowly led to Rudy telling Christine his truth. His business trip to Turkey, it hadn't been for business, but instead was a honeymoon and he had just gotten married. He apparently told Christine that the pregnancy would not only destroy his marriage, but his entire life, as his devout Hindu family would disown him for having a child out of wedlock. Several sources reported that at the time, Rudy was planning to enter dental school, and his family was going to help pay for it. So aside from being disowned, his future career would be in jeopardy as well. There were several more phone calls on the subject, each time with Rudy apparently asking Christine to have an abortion for his sake, but she wouldn't budge. She tried to explain. She didn't want money. She didn't want him to give up his life, but she wanted his name on the birth certificate, and she wanted their child to know his father. As June passed and July came around, things began turning darker. It was during this time that Christine began expressing her fear to friends and family, fear that Rudy was going to do something to harm her and the baby. She reportedly later told her friend Valerie Santos, quote, "If anything happens to me, he will probably have done it," end quote. It was surprising for those who knew Christine. She'd never been the type to show fear, but considering the circumstances, no one doubted that she absolutely was in fear for her life and the life of her unborn child. The anger slowly gave way to silence. The phone call stopped. Rudy distanced himself from Christine, and while she beeped him multiple times to continue that conversation, he wouldn't return her calls. Sometime in late July, a woman called Christine's home several times trying to track down the person who had been beeping her husband. When Christine finally picked up the phone, she found herself talking to Rudy's wife, Rochelle. For the first few conversations, Christine didn't want to break the news herself. She told Rochelle that she needed to talk to her husband, that she needed to hear it from him. However, Rochelle eventually did the math and asked Christine the question, was she pregnant? When Christine confirmed it, she explained that she didn't want to break up their marriage, that she just wanted Rudy to have a role in their child's life. There were several phone calls, and a weird balance developed between Christine and Rochelle, with Rochelle eventually saying that Christine could have Rudy if she wanted him, but Christine didn't want him either. By the end of July, the calls had stopped, and it appeared that both Rochelle and Rudy were keeping away. While Christine was upset, friends and family felt relieved. It wasn't good for her to be around them, to be arguing all the time. The peace, though, wouldn't last. In early October, Rudy showed up at Christine's home. He explained that his family had disowned him, that Rochelle had kicked him out, and he was homeless and didn't have any money to take care of himself. According to Christine's mother, she didn't really believe the whole story, but she felt bad for him. Friends have since speculated that while the situation was a disaster and Christine still didn't trust Rudy, there was a part of her that still cared for him. She eventually began spending time talking with him, though according to Christine, nothing happened between them. That part of their relationship was done, but she wanted to help him, and she even encouraged him to try and work things out with his wife. That's when the change began taking effect. Rudy, who had previously been diametrically opposed to her pregnancy, became supportive. He offered name suggestions, volunteered to be her birthing coach, and expressed his interest in being involved in their child's life. As you might imagine, this was very disconcerting as Christine wasn't exactly sure what she could believe. On the one hand, while he was saying all this stuff, he didn't seem to show a direct interest in the child in so much as he never wanted to touch her belly. He never wanted to talk to the baby. This is also during a time where Christine was sharing with friends that she was still afraid of Rudy and still afraid that he might do something to harm the baby or her, but she had a way of rationalizing it to herself. If something did happen, he would obviously be the prime suspect, so it really wouldn't make sense for him to do anything. At least, that's how Christine felt about it. Things were moving forward, and while the whole situation was confusing to say the least, Christine decided to focus on what mattered most to her baby. She picked a birthing center, began socking away as much money as she could, and she was happy. She wanted to be a mother. She was up for the challenge, and in just a few months, she'd graduate college and move on to pursue her career. Kathy, Christine's sister, later told the New York Times that she, quote, wanted the baby. She was spiritually, emotionally, and financially ready. She was not planning marriage. She was happy with that. We were already buying baby clothes. She was swimming, totally into it, taking vitamins every day. End quote. According to Christine, Rudy had been putting his life back together. He'd moved in with his cousin, but was actively searching for a place of his own. When he finally found one, he reached out to Christine. Would she be willing to come to his new apartment and give him a hand cleaning it up? Christine agreed, telling Rudy to pick her up at her place on Saturday, the 24th. According to Christine's roommates, when Rudy arrived, she wasn't ready yet, and so she told him to come up, but he seemed hesitant, like he didn't want to be there. One roommate later described Rudy as appearing nervous and fidgety. Eventually, Christine was ready, and the two walked out of the building together between 11:30 and 12 p.m. This would be the last official sighting of Christine. She was 5 months pregnant. Christine was only supposed to be gone for a few hours, telling roommates she'd return later in the afternoon or early evening. When she didn't return home by that night, one of her roommates reached out to her sister Kathy and explained the situation. No one was sure what was going on. Was it possible Christine had decided to stay over with Rudy? Was she simply coming home later? When the sun rose the next morning and Christine still hadn't returned or contacted anyone, that initial concern turned to fear. Kathy reached out to the New York Police Department looking to file a missing persons report, but she was met with some resistance. There was a sense that Christine would return and they shouldn't be so worried about it. Kathy was astounded by the lack of concern, explaining the situation with Rudy, the fear Christine had about her safety, the fact that she was 5 months pregnant, hadn't shown up at her job, which she never missed the day at, and was in the middle of midterms to graduate in January. But again, she was rebuffed. Kathy later told CBS News, quote, "I said, well, what am I supposed to do? They said, I don't know, go find the guy and ask him what happened," end quote. The official police investigation into Christine's disappearance wouldn't be launched until 7 days later. It was up to Christine's family and friends to try and find her in the beginning, and they pulled out all the stops. Siblings came to New York to aid in the search. Christine's mother, who was working as a truck driver at the time, wouldn't receive the message about her missing daughter until a week later on Halloween. Flyers were produced and put all around the city and surrounding boroughs. They begged for assistance in looking for the missing woman, expressing tremendous concern about the fact that she was 5 months pregnant. Kathy later told the New York Times, quote, "We've checked the hospitals and the morgue. We've enlisted the help of the police. We've checked for credit activity and the ATMs. She hasn't written a check. There's just no trace," end quote. Unsure of what else to do, Kathy and her husband, Kevin, were joined by Christine's former boyfriend and close friend, Nick Papanicolaou, and they made their way to Baruch College looking to get information about Rudy's whereabouts. The school, however, was unable to release personal information without some kind of a legal decree, and so through a system of friends and classmates, they were able to get a general idea of Rudy's home location. Unsure of where the home was, the group asked around and eventually landed on an older man who turned out to be Rudy's uncle. Allegedly, the uncle explained that he had seen Rudy Saturday morning, but not again until Sunday evening. Rudy's mother arrived next, and she too was asked about her son's whereabouts. When neither provided an answer, the group returned to their car to wait for Rudy to come home. When Rudy did arrive, it was with a police escort. According to New York Magazine, Rudy's mother had contacted him to tell him that people were looking for him, so he'd called the police to protect him as he went home. It was in front of these officers that a disturbing argument broke out, with Kevin and Nick demanding answers from Rudy. Accusations of murder were hurled, though Rudy wouldn't provide any information, allegedly replying, quote, "I don't know what you're talking about. Why don't you go file a missing persons report?" end quote. Apparently, after some pressing, Rudy provided what little information he claimed to possess. In his story, he had picked Christine up from her apartment and they'd gone to the mall together, though he couldn't recall which mall, and he claimed that he had waited in the car while she was shopping. He ultimately claimed to have dropped off Christine between 3 and 4 p.m. just a few blocks from her apartment, saying that she had wanted to go to a health food store on her way home. As far as he was concerned, that was the last time he had seen Christine, and she was fine when he left. It's interesting to note at this point, Christine's family learned the truth, that Rudy was still living at his family's home with his wife, and in fact had never been thrown out, as he had been telling Christine. Desperate for answers, the group moved on to the area in which Rudy claimed to have dropped Christine off. Ultimately, two witnesses were found. One, the owner of a health food store, claimed to have seen a woman fitting Christine's description shopping in the store that night, around 7 p.m. Another witness, who worked in a laundromat, believed he might have seen Christine walk by the business that afternoon, though neither witness could be completely certain. Later, The health food store owner expressed doubt, as she described Christine as wearing peach-colored pants. Christine neither owned peach-colored pants, nor was she wearing them when she left her apartment on the 24th. The laundromat employee also later stated that he couldn't be sure that he had actually seen Christine Kupka. Within a few days, news of Christine's disappearance hit the media, and headlines were splashed with stories of the pregnant college student's mysterious disappearance. Tips began coming in, some of which family members tracked down on their own, though none led them any closer to the truth. By the time investigators did get involved in the disappearance, they were quite blunt about the fact that they had no evidence that a crime had been committed in the first place. Hours later, though, the NYPD referred to the case as that of a missing person, with Sergeant Ellen Tietjen telling the New York Times, quote, "There's no suspects at this time. They're investigating a missing person case," end quote. 9 days after Christine went missing, on November 2nd, the NYPD finally sat down to interview Rudy. What exactly was discussed has never been revealed, but we do know that following the interview, police explained they did not consider Rudy a suspect, nor had they uncovered any information which would lead them to believe he had been involved in her disappearance. Kathy later told the Capital Times that when Rudy showed up for the interview, he had little to offer and came with his lawyers. Curiously, it was later reported that while police considered Rudy to be cooperative during his interview, at least one source described him as evasive, and it was revealed that Rudy had been unable to supply an alibi for his whereabouts during the time that Christine had gone missing. Frustrated with what they perceived as a lack of dedication to the investigation, the Kupka family hired a private investigator, Gil Alba, a former NYPD detective. While Christine's family was firmly in the belief that Rudy was connected to Christine's disappearance, some detectives weren't so sure. When speaking with New York Magazine, Lieutenant Philip Mahoney, commanding officer of the NYPD's Missing Persons Bureau, explained, quote, "I can tell you this, none of the four detectives on this case think it's open and shut. This Rudy may be the guy. You certainly have a guy with a motive. He was the last one seen with her. You can't ignore that. But it still doesn't add up. It's no crime to be the last person seen with somebody. It's no crime for a married guy to get his girlfriend pregnant. It's a shame, but not a crime. You can even say, I have plenty of reason to want her gone, but you're still not going to get an arrest on it. Our biggest fear is she's lying in a ditch somewhere, and we're walking by her every day because we're focusing on Rudy," end quote. The search efforts for Christine covered many of the areas she was known to traverse, the train she took to school, the restaurant she worked in, and surrounding areas. Then, they moved to areas where bodies are often found. Abandoned buildings, industrial areas, bridges, parks. Nothing was found, no one seemed to know where Christine was, and while her family continued to point towards Rudy, police were clear they didn't have any solid evidence to make any accusations. They felt they didn't even have any solid evidence to link Rudy to Christine's disappearance in the slightest. There was, though, one area of interest that both police and the family agreed on and wanted to look at. Rudy's cousin, the one he had lied about living with at the time, owned an auto parts store on Liberty Avenue in Queens. Was it possible that Christine could have been killed and hidden there? That was an answer everyone seemed to want, but there was one major problem. There wasn't enough evidence to get a warrant to search the building, and the owner refused to allow anyone to do so. There was major construction occurring at the location during that time, and it was noted that a new and large area of concrete had been poured. The family couldn't help but wonder what secrets might be found beneath that floor. Unfortunately, it would take more than a decade before investigators were able to search for any traces of Christine in that building. Sadly, at this point, the investigation began dropping off, at least for those involved in an official capacity. Between November and December, the number of detectives working Christine's case would dwindle from 4 to 1. The search, though, was far from over for Christine's sister, Kathy. From the beginning, Kathy was convinced that Christine had been murdered, and she was determined to find her come hell or high water. The search would cost her a lot, not just money, but relationships and, in her own opinion, even her marriage. Through her work with Gil Alba, they were able to interview more than 800 people. During an interview on the Greta Van Susteren show, Alba claimed to have spoken with members of Rudy's family under the protection of anonymity. During that same interview, Alba explained, quote, "My focus is totally on one individual, and I believe that he had help, and I'm after that second individual also," end quote. There were very few developments in the case, though. In June of 1999, 8 months after her disappearance, Baruch College granted Christine an honorary bachelor's degree. Christine's mother attended and later told the New York Daily News, quote, "This is a chapter of Christine's life that's closing, and she's supposed to be here in her cap and gown with all her classmates. I know she's dead because she'd never leave me under these circumstances. If she were alive, she'd let us know," end quote. Sadly, there's very little to report during this time. Kathy, to her credit, did everything she could to keep her sister's story in the press. She appeared on talk shows, news shows, she did interviews, and eventually turned her attention to trying to help others find their own missing loved ones. Despite her devotion and the hope and dedication of all who knew and loved Christine, days turned to weeks, weeks to months, and months to years. Coverage of this case ramps up throughout late 1998 into early 1999, and then drops steadily until there are years between articles, most of which simply retell her disappearance on anniversaries, with little new information to add. In 2005, 7 years after Christine vanished, the Wisconsin State Journal wrote an extensive article about the case. Several people were interviewed, including Gil Alba. When asked what he had learned over the time he had spent working on the case, Alba explained, quote, "My investigation shows that Rudy Persaud is holding the key to this investigation. He may have had help. We have other information that leads us to a garage on Liberty Avenue in Queens. At this point, we don't have enough evidence that connects to anybody, and that's why we really can't make an arrest right now," end quote. By this time, Rudy had long since moved away from New York, working as a dentist in Florida. In September of 2009, Christine's mother passed away, never knowing the truth of what became of her daughter. Just a few months later, 11 years after Christine's disappearance, Rudy's cousin, who owned the building everyone had been wanting to search, finally sold it. The building was converted into a plumbing supply store, and the new owner was sympathetic to the Kupka family's cause, telling them that they could search it as they pleased. On Wednesday, March 6th, 2010, a cadaver dog was brought into the building and signaled a hit, having detected the scent of human decay. Days later, more cadaver dogs were brought in to verify the hit and confirm the presence of human decomposition. Police began digging up the basement floor over the course of 3 days, at which time some bones were recovered. For Kathy, it was a potential break in the case, but unfortunately that hope would be short-lived. Examination by the medical examiner's office confirmed the difficult truth. The bones weren't human and had likely belonged to a cow or a pig. It was a heartbreaking setback, but there were still questions lingering about the cadaver dogs. Off the record, a police source speculated that the hit may have indicated that a human body had been present, but may have been moved sometime before the building was actually sold. Sadly, this is the last major development in the case, and 10 years later there have been no new updates, no discoveries, nothing. Christine Kupka vanished on Saturday, October 24th, 1998. When last seen, Christine was described as being a Caucasian female with red hair and blue eyes, standing 5 feet 8 inches tall and weighing approximately 140 pounds. She was visibly pregnant. Christine has a scar on her nose, freckles, and her ears are pierced. She was last seen wearing a lightweight black sweater, a long black skirt, and black boots. She was last seen in the company of Rudy Persaud and never returned from her trip with him. At the time of her disappearance, Christine was 28 years old and 5 months pregnant. If alive today, she would be 50 years old and her child would be 21. Christine's family has come to accept the reality that she's likely dead though they remain determined to find her remains, to give her a proper burial, and of course, to see justice delivered. Someone out there has the answers, someone knows what happened, and even if the family fully believes Rudy is that someone, over more than 20 years, there has never been any solid evidence found to make that link. Not enough for a warrant, not enough for an arrest. However, there is a belief that someone else knows what happened as well, and it's unlikely others haven't picked up on the truth over the years. When asked about the case, the lack of information, the lack of evidence, Kathy told the New York Daily News, quote, "We're just stuck. That's it, until someone talks. I'm just hoping somebody remembers something or somebody admits something. To find her is the greatest thing I want. Second is to have whoever did this to Christine answer for it." What do you do to keep your mind sharp? For me, I enjoy the excitement and challenge of trivia, and if you're like me, then you need to play Trivia Star. It's the best way to test yourself. Trivia Star is a free mobile quiz game that's entertaining and challenging. You can choose categories like music, sports, movies, TV, animals, or celebrities. There are over 60 categories to choose from, so there's always more trivia to explore. If you choose the correct answer from multiple choices and beat the clock, you move on to the next level. The questions get harder over time, but if you get stuck, don't worry. You can use coins and gems to get hints and beat the level. And Trivia Star has 2,000 five-star reviews in the Apple Store. Join them today and see if you're smart enough to win. Right now, Trivia Star is offering you 2,500 coins and 500 gems when you download and play. Just go to the Apple or Google Store and search for Trivia Star. Again, search Trivia Star and enjoy 2,500 coins and 500 gems. Download Trivia Star for free today. The details surrounding the disappearance of Christine Kupka are disturbing, sad, and frustrating. A brilliant woman, independent and driven, focused and determined, she had her whole life ahead of her, a life she planned to spend helping others, fighting for women's rights, and of course, raising her child. One warm Saturday afternoon in October, she went along with the father of her child and never came back. More than 20 years later, and the truth of what became of her has been as elusive as the justice which has never been served in her name or the name of her child. In so many cases, we see a young life filled with potential, snuffed out before its time. Here, we see that with Christine, but we also see the life of a child destroyed before it could even begin. The Kupka family has suffered tremendously over the past two decades. They've never had the closure they so desperately seek. They've been robbed of seeing Christine live her life, of getting to know her child, of experiencing all the beautiful milestones that come along with being an aunt, uncle, or grandmother. Christine's mother passed away, never knowing what became of her daughter, and to this day, her family still hungers to find Christine, to give her the proper burial she deserves, to mourn, and to see justice punish the person responsible for all of their pain and grief. When it comes to Christine's disappearance, there are essentially only two ways people believe things could have happened. Either Christine's family is correct and Rudy was directly involved, or his story could be true, and sometime after he dropped Christine off, she encountered a yet unknown assailant who abducted and likely murdered both Christine and her unborn child. Obviously, the former is the far more popular theory, with a lot more evidence surrounding it, though for the most part that evidence is circumstantial at best. I think we'll begin with the latter, that this was a random crime committed by an unidentified perpetrator, before moving into all of the information surrounding Christine and Rudy. According to Rudy, after his afternoon with Christine, he dropped her off a few blocks from her home because she wanted to go to a health food store. There were two witnesses who eventually came forward claiming that they had in fact seen Christine in that area the night she vanished. One of them, the owner of the health food store, believed she had seen Christine enter the store that night at approximately 7 p.m. The other, an employee at a local laundromat, believed that he had seen Christine walk past the front window of his business that same evening. These two eyewitness accounts ultimately play a major role in this case, but at their core is a big problem. Neither witness is actually sure that the woman they saw was Christine Kupka. We know from the health food store owner that she saw a woman fitting Christine's description wearing peach-colored pants. According to everyone who knew Christine, and after an official accounting of her clothing and belongings, Christine didn't own peach-colored pants. Beyond that, witnesses who saw Christine that day before she left her home described her as wearing a black skirt and black top, not a shade of peach to be seen. It wasn't until after these details emerged and subsequent conversations between the witnesses and law enforcement that both changed their position to some degree, stating that they couldn't be sure the woman they had seen was Christine. There was no malice there. Both simply wanted to help. But as it turns out, there is no way to actually verify their sightings. On top of that, it adds another level of complexity to the case as there's no physical evidence to begin with. Their uncertainty about the sightings would grant a criminal defense attorney the ability to argue reasonable doubt. Any intelligent attorney would argue if these people had seen Christine, then Rudy couldn't be responsible for her disappearance. As for those peach pants, well, couldn't you just argue she might have bought them at the mall that day? It's fairly common for a prosecutor to be hesitant to try a case without a body. This happens a lot, and in some cases, there's a larger amount of evidence than has ever been found during this investigation. Now, when you factor in the possible sightings, most prosecutors would want more evidence, at least more solid evidence, before they'd even consider filing charges. Unfortunately, in this case, that evidence has yet to emerge. And while there are many who believe they know who's responsible for this atrocious crime, without something beyond suspicion, it's going to be difficult to sell. That is, perhaps, why this case has grown cold over the past 20 years. But you have to consider all possibilities, and without evidence to the contrary, it's difficult to completely rule out the chance that Christine could have been abducted off the streets of Brooklyn, not far from her home, after spending her afternoon with Rudy. The fact of the matter is, we simply don't know. We'll get into the questionable details about Rudy's account when we move into that theory, but for now, let's try to consider the chance that something else happened here. It would hardly be the first time we've addressed a case where a woman was abducted from the streets near her own home. Whether we're talking about a robbery gone wrong, or maybe someone or a group of people out looking to abduct a woman, it's not something which can be completely ruled out. There are, of course, issues. According to Rudy's story, he dropped Christine off sometime between 3 and 4 p.m., but the witnesses didn't report their sightings until closer to 7, which would raise the question of where did Christine go for between 3 and 4 hours if she truly was dropped off just a few blocks from her home near the very store she would allegedly be sighted in hours later. There haven't been any other eyewitnesses. No one else reported seeing Christine walking down the street, stopping at a cafe or a restaurant. People who lived nearby who would be familiar with her didn't see her that afternoon. The only people who claimed to see Christine that night saw her later, and as we've already discussed, they aren't even sure about that. Christine was reportedly visibly pregnant by this point. Unfortunately, for some sick people out there, this would make her a more likely target. She might be considered easier to overcome because she would be concerned with protecting the life of her child. And if someone pulled a gun or a knife, she might be willing to follow their orders if she believed that her and her child would be spared. Unfortunately, there's a lot of possibilities here, and New York wasn't exactly the safest place in the world in 1998. There were 116,000 violent crimes in New York that year, with 924 murders, 3,800 sexual assaults, 49,000 robberies, and 62,000 assaults. That means there were an average of 170 assaults per day. I suppose the major issue is there's nothing to work with. There weren't any reports of an attack in that area that night. No one saw a woman struggling with an assailant. No one seemed to witness anything. It wouldn't be the first time someone was taken and there were no witnesses and no evidence, but it certainly makes finding that person all the more difficult. I think, for the most part, when looking at this case, people have to choose between the likelihood of two scenarios, a woman being targeted at random, or the last person in her company being directly responsible. I haven't seen a great deal of support for the former theory, but there's no way to completely deny it. Not yet, at least. With that being said, Let's move into the second theory, the one everyone is always talking about. We know there was a lot of tension between Christine and Rudy. He wasn't happy about the pregnancy. He worried the situation would ruin his marriage, his relationship with his family, and that it could put his career in jeopardy. We know that when Christine and Rudy got together, it was under false pretenses, with him allegedly telling her that he was single and available, when in reality he was preparing to get married and honeymoon in Turkey. What he told Christine was only a business trip. In the aftermath, according to Christine, as well as those she confided in, Rudy was angry. He wanted her to have an abortion, something she wouldn't consider. He tried for those first few weeks to convince her to get rid of the child, first through anger, later through begging and a desire for sympathy, but Christine wouldn't budge. She was going to have her baby, and if Rudy didn't want to be a part of the child's life, that would be his choice. But Christine wasn't about to let her child grow up never knowing who her father was. She wanted Rudy's name on the birth certificate. She wanted her child to have some relationship with her father. We know from Christine's friends and family that she became frightened. She believed Rudy would do something to terminate the pregnancy, or maybe kill them both. And so she began avoiding any possibility of being alone with him. If he wanted to talk face to face, they'd do it somewhere public. She even went so far as to tell friends that if anything happened to her, Rudy was likely the one responsible. She had her guard up. She was looking to protect her child, but then everything began to change. Rudy showed up at her house claiming that he'd been thrown out, that his wife had left him, that his parents had disowned him, and now he's living with his cousin. He didn't have any money. He was hungry and struggling. Christine didn't fully trust the situation, but she felt bad for him. Not only did she try to help him out, she even counseled him in a way, advising him to try and make things right with his wife, to try and work it out. She explained she didn't want to destroy his life. She didn't want to take him to court and get a bunch of money. She just wanted him to be involved in her child's life, even if it was just a weekend kind of thing. For whatever reason, Rudy seemed to have changed. He wanted to be involved now. He was suggesting names, volunteering to be a birthing coach. While Christine seemed to slowly acquiesce to these changes, friends were not as moved. They felt something was off, and later, several commented that Christine did too. She just had a lot of faith in others and was able to convince herself that the situation was legitimate, that Rudy had changed. She believed it would be foolish for him to try and do something to her. He'd be the prime suspect if he did. Unfortunately, it may have been the lingering feelings of love she still felt for Rudy that would aid him in his ploy. I say that because we know he was lying. He didn't get thrown out of his home. His wife didn't leave him. In fact, the day Kathy and her husband showed up at Rudy's house, they discovered that he'd been living with his family the whole time. He was doing fine. He was dressed well. He certainly didn't look disheveled and homeless as Christine saw him when he showed up on her porch. So, what was the point to all of that? Why was he lying? What was his end goal? And why did he come back into Christine's life and try to win her over? Depending on your perspective, that's not a difficult question to answer. So on Saturday, October 24th, after 3 weeks of telling this concocted story about the state of his life, Rudy finally gets a chance to have Christine go somewhere private with him. According to all reports, Christine told friends that Rudy had purchased a new apartment, she'd still believed he'd been thrown out, and she was going there to take a look and help him clean it up. It wasn't supposed to be a very long trip, just a few hours and she'd be back, but as we all know, Christine never returned. What happened that afternoon is open to a lot of speculation, but based on a statement from Rudy's own uncle, he left their home Saturday morning and didn't return until Sunday evening, and according to police sources, he didn't have an alibi for where he was during that time. When questioned, Rudy claimed he had taken Christine to a mall, not to an apartment. Of course, when he was asked about the mall he had taken her to, he couldn't remember. He helped support his argument that he wasn't really sure what mall it was because when they went, he didn't go in. He sat in the car. Doesn't really make a lot of sense, does it? He picked up Christine from her home. He took her to the mall. He sat in the car while she shopped for several hours, and then he dropped her off a few blocks from home. Does that make sense to anyone? Not to mention, Christine said it was about going to his new apartment. I doubt she'd have a reason to lie about it. If they were going to a mall, why not just say that? It doesn't make any sense. Unfortunately, We really don't know the truth of what happened that day. You have Rudy's account, and then what Christine's friends and family were told, and what they believe. The investigators working this case made things pretty clear. They didn't have enough evidence to charge anyone with anything, and as far as they were concerned, there was no reason to look at Rudy as a suspect. Now, is that completely true, or were the police trying to make Rudy believe he wasn't being looked at so closely? That's hard to say, but I find it difficult to swallow that given the circumstances. No detectives found this situation to be a little more than suspicious. Sadly, when a pregnant woman disappears, it isn't all that uncommon for their lover or former lover to be responsible. A 2017 study conducted by the CDC found that out of 10,000 women killed across the United States each year, more than 50% die at the hands of a partner or former partner, and among those who are killed, 15% of them were pregnant at the time. Jennifer Pollitt Hill, who works for Hope Works, designed to assist the victims of domestic violence, explained, quote, "The key element in an intimate partner violence situation is power and control over the other person. Pregnancy just throws that dynamic off between these two people." End quote. Rudy didn't want Christine to give birth to their child. He didn't want to deal with both the emotional and financial stresses this would put on him, let alone the problems it would cause with his wife and family. I don't think there's any denying that Christine's disappearance seemed to work out in his favor. He got what he wanted. What he saw as a major problem was gone, and he was free to move on with his life, which he did. He's never made any statements about the crime. He's never expressed grief or sorrow about the disappearance of the woman who was carrying his child. In fact, despite multiple attempts from reporters, neither he nor his wife have ever had any comment. When confronted by the family, he didn't offer help or information. He didn't participate in any searches. He allowed police to question him, and that's the only way he's ever been involved. You'd think you'd want to help find the woman who was carrying your child, but then again, the ending of her life seemed to open the doors to allow his life to continue. So what do you believe? Could this have been random? Or does Rudy know more than he's ever shared? There's that garage, also, on Liberty Street in Queens, owned by one of Rudy's cousins. It was an automotive shop in 1998. Despite both police and Christine's family making requests to search it, they were never allowed to. According to Kathy, she continued asking until eventually the cousin became angry and got nasty, telling her to leave him alone. Now, not letting someone search your building doesn't necessarily correlate to guilt, but it's also going to plant the idea in people's heads that you might have something to hide. A woman is missing. Her family is desperate to find her. What can it hurt to let them search? 11 years passed before police got the opportunity, and when they did, a cadaver dog indicated a hit. That hit could indicate the presence of a body, but it could also indicate that a body had at some point been there, but was no longer. I've seen a lot of speculation about it, and it's important to note that cadaver dogs can make mistakes, but given the circumstances, it certainly makes people raise their eyebrows. This month will mark 22 years since Christine Kupka vanished. Over all of that time, the truth has remained elusive and the evidence has remained in short supply. The case has grown cold, and in the past decade, there have been very few articles discussing this case. It seems, for the most part, someone got away with murder. Double murder. Someone stole Christine's life and the life of her child, and for more than two decades that person has managed to walk the streets, free to live a life they deprived two others of. It's a horrifying case. It's a disturbing story, and it's one that sticks with everyone who becomes familiar with it. Unfortunately, without the discovery of new evidence, a legitimate tip, or an outright confession, the disappearance of Christine Kupka will remain open, unsolved, and very cold. If you're looking for more information about the disappearance of Christine Kupka, you can visit ChristineKupka.com. New York Magazine did an article entitled Vanished, which goes very extensively into the early stages of this case. Christine's sister Kathy has appeared on many television shows, including Greta Van Susteren and The Lisa Show, discussing this case. If you have any information about the disappearance of Christine Kupka, please contact the New York City Police Department's Cold Case Squad at 718-330-4128. The case number is KNMP07998. What do you believe happened? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, message me on Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, or comment in the Facebook group. Obviously, in the case we have previously discussed, there are many suggestions and a lot of speculation in relation to domestic violence. I think it's important to note that October is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. The United States Department of Justice estimates that 1.3 million women and 835,000 men are victims of domestic violence each year. Every 9 seconds, a woman in the United States is beaten or assaulted by a current or ex-significant other. 1 in 4 men are victims of some form of violence by an intimate partner. If you or someone you love has been the victim of domestic violence, you are not alone and there is support available. You can use the Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or you can visit thehotline.org to talk online. All assistance is free and completely confidential with 24/7 support and resources. If you simply wish to help, you can also make a donation at thehotline.org. It's time that everyone stands up against domestic violence. Did you know that CrimeCon is coming to the United Kingdom and will be in London on June 12th and 13th, 2021? And I'll be there representing Trace Evidence on Podcast Row. I'm really looking forward to being a part of this amazing event. And if you're considering going, you can use the promo code TRACE21 for 10% off your ticket. That's TRACE21 for 10% off. Visit crimecon.co.uk for more information. I'd like to take a moment now to thank our amazing Patreon producers, Alicia Lorraine, Astrid Maria Nyer, Aurora K, Brittany Bivens, Brian Kemmerling, Christine Greco, Krista Colvin, D'Earthy, Diane Dyson, Eamon Brady, Guillerme Pinto, Jennifer Winkler, Joni Berkwitz, Kate Much, Michael Draves, Nick Mohar Schurz, Pamela Coburn, Quinn McBreen, Roberta Jansen, Sarah Mascaratolo, Travis Skepko, Stephanie Joyner, Stephanie Eve, Tom Archer, Tracy Woods, and Zari. You're all amazing and your contributions are greatly appreciated, as are all patrons. If you're interested in supporting Trace Evidence, please visit patreon.com/traceevidence or visit trace-evidence.com for further information. I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen, and I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.